8:34, Monday edition of the Mornings with Ed show. And this morning's Artist Corner is brought to you by the Sawdust Festival's Winter Fantasy. Every weekend between November 20th through December 19th. And part of Sawdust Festival Winter Fantasy is this great photographer I'm sitting in front of right now, Dan Stensland, who thank you for coming in this morning for Artist Corner today. How are you, Dan?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me, Ed. Pleasure to be here on a Monday morning.
It's great to have you. Now, I figured that when we invited a photographer to come in, that you would have walked in with a camera strapped around you. Are you constantly, or do you walk around that way sometimes? And do you see things that you may miss if you don't have a camera on you?
You know, my favorite camera right now is my little iPhone in my pocket. There's another photographer who has this saying that the best camera you have is the one on you.
Right.
And there are times when I definitely have to be geared up, and sometimes I'm overdone if I'm hiking on a glacier in a foreign country.
Right.
Sometimes I'm just walking down the street and I'm like, oh my gosh, this little iPhone thing captured beautifully.
Fantastic. So you make sure you upgrade to the latest model each and every time you can, of course.
Kinda, yes.
On an average day, I'm wondering how many pictures does your mind see as you walk through your day and you say, wow, that would make a good picture right there.
Gotta be hundreds.
Does it happen all the time, all day long?
Yeah, I'm looking for beauty in a lot of things. And noticing, things happen organically, of course.
Right. Now, you grew up in Canada.
Pretty much, I did.
Okay,
yeah.
Born in the United States, mm-hmm. but moved to Canada early on?
Yeah, we have to make that clear. Born in the United States. Proud of that.
All right.
But I love Canada, too.
All right.
Shout out to a beautiful country and beautiful people up there.
Now, where were you born and where'd you move to?
Eugene, Oregon.
Okay.
Then Minnesota. Then my dad's job actually took us up to Edmonton, a very, very wonderfully cold part of Canada.
Right.
But it was just a great place to grow up. Being in the country, you know, a kid's life.
Right.
Open air. Open country, you know, seeing the northern lights was actually kind of a normal thing up there.
Right. What a magnificent visual experience you had as a kid. That obviously has to lend to your understanding the beauty of things around you to take pictures, right?
Yeah, and that's almost what landed me in Canada, having that upbringing, you know, the Canadian Rockies.
Right.
I always had to have a little bit of that natural beauty surrounding me and, you know, really fortunately ended up in this town somehow,
right.
And it's pretty tough to beat for natural beauty as well here.
Right. Well, fortunate for us as well, by the way. So when you, growing up, were you drawn to outdoor pictures or what kind of pictures were you drawn to? Because I noticed that currently one of my favorite shots of yours is this old abandoned rusted out car.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. So what drew you to the types of pictures that you're attracted to? What physically drew you there?
That's a great question. I don't know if it's something I can easily explain,
right.
I just look at something and I go, that speaks to me.
Right.
And sometimes it doesn't make sense why it speaks to me. I might think this is not a beautiful thing, but somehow it is. And it might be beautiful because of nostalgia. It might be beautiful because of an emotion that comes from that scene. It might just be beautiful because it's obvious. Like we're in the middle of creation. We're looking at this amazing mountain scenery and just going, wow, I'm standing here at the camera. Who am I? You know, I'm in the scene of giants here.
Right.
I'm lucky just to be able to stand here and capture that. And hopefully my picture, you know, presents a hint of the actual beauty of that.
Right. Let me ask you specifically about the abandoned car that I love so much
of
the picture you took. What is it that elicited emotion about that car in you?
You know, there's a lot of things with those areas. I think that picture may have been taken in Bodie, California here.
Okay.
And this is one of the great things about California. So much rich material for us to go out and experience. And one thing about the rusted car is I love nostalgia. I love the design of the old cars. You know, you got this classic old American auto industry that kind of birthed what we have today for good and bad. And then in those mining towns, they're like ghost towns, but you just have this intense, intense appreciation and maybe trying to understand the amount of work that people had to go through back then to do that. I mean, these towns are in the middle of nowhere. You see these giant hulks of machinery and you think, how did people get this stuff here? How much backbreaking work did they do to build on these things to get to where we are today? And it's just, I have this massive appreciation that I'm standing on the shoulders of giants when I'm in a place like that. And that rusted old hulk of a car just becomes a beautiful picture of a life that was lived way before mine. And that probably involved a lot harder work and a lot harder times, but brought us to where we are.
That's beautifully explained because the way I took it, the thing that drew me, it's a conduit. That car, that picture of it is a conduit between two different eras, between two different existences. I love that picture, man. Way to go.
Well, now
you bounced around with photography with different ideas. First thinking you wanted to shoot fashion.
Of course.
And then moving into wedding work. You just said that you find there's beauty in the obvious, like the mountains and the outdoors. Is what you capture randomly, like outdoor stuff, like the car, for instance, infinitely more rewarding than something that's posed for, like modeling or...
You know, surprisingly, it's not.
Okay.
There's a, you know, an instructor once taught us the difference between making a picture and taking a picture.
Okay.
And there's equal magic in both sometimes. Right. You know, there's something about arriving on a scene and it could just be a perfect sunset that blows you away.
Right.
You know, last year, Halloween, October 31st here in Laguna, we had an incredible one. And I remember specifically just because of the date. Then again, you might try and create something. I have this one image that became one of my personal fine art favorites where I found this old mannequin at an estate sale. And this image popped into mind that I had to make with this mannequin. And it was going to be a melodramatic, moody, stormy, introspective, lonely shot at the ocean. And I had to have a perfect storm. And I found this perfect storm, got this mannequin in the shot. I was a weird guy carrying a mannequin down to the beach, you know?
You gotta be thinking, hey, what the hell's going on
over
there?
Right. Fortunately, it was raining, and so there weren't too many, onlookers looking at this guy, but this picture came together exactly like my mind created. And it was work, it took a lot of timing, but completely proud of it, totally loved the way it came out. So that's where you make a picture, you put work into it, and that's equally rewarding.
Oh, okay, yeah, beautifully explained again. And do you still have the mannequin?
I sure do. Okay. It's in my garage. When people come by and the garage is open, I kind of, you know, saunter over to cover that up. What the heck has this guy got in his garage?
You can throw it in the passenger seat for the carpool lane from time to time. back in 2007, one of your best childhood friends gave you a unique photo job, and he was, I guess, a mountain climber?
Yes,
tell us about that.
Yeah. Now, this is a friend that I actually grew up with in Canada, who also lives here in the States now, but Don Bowie, and you know, you can check out his Instagram too if you're into climbing things, great material. He said, hey, you know, and he'd been going off on these trips, and I didn't know much about it because we hadn't reconnected for a while since I'd, you know, moved to the US.
Right.
And then we turned out we'd both ended up in this country here. He says, hey, I'm going to do an ascent of K2, and what's, you know, one of the most dangerous mountains in the world.
Right.
And would you like to have a, you know, offer of a lifetime to come along and photograph and just document the journey into base camp? I'm not a climber, so I'm obviously not going to try and climb something like K2.
But base camp is still 17,000 feet up.
It's up there, and it is a crazy, hectic, beautiful path on a frozen glacier in Pakistan for 6 days, you know, with mule trains carrying gear, porters carrying gear. You've got your own gear, and you're hiking 7 hours a day in cold, snow, rain, setting up camp, but you're having delicious meals prepared by local Pakistani chefs. It's a great adventure.
Right. And does it lend for artistic creativity in the shots you take?
It really does. I mean, the mountains in Pakistan are stunning. I mean, Pakistan has several of the world's highest peaks.
Right.
And when you're walking along this glacier, that's all you see is these massive towers, twice the height of, I mean, our highest mountain here in California is Whitney, a little over 14,000.
Right.
And most of these peaks are in the 28,000 foot range.
Right.
So you can't help but just be stunned every step of the way. You're either stunned from being out of breath or stunned from looking at these magnificent giants.
Right. It inspires awe. Do you see yourself going back?
Yeah, for sure. Right. You know, I thought, you know, like you initially said, this could be the trip of a lifetime. And I found myself going back. I even had another childhood friend who decided he wanted to come along at my most recent trip in 2019. Within the first, you know, 8 hours of journeying on the glacier, he was, you know, mad as heck.
Right.
Stenzlin, what the heck did you get me into? You actually went on this trip before and you went again? This is horrible. By the end of the trip, he fell in love with it. And, you know, he wants to go again as well. But it really is an adventure. You just have to fight through it and complete it. And then you fall in love with it. The people, the scenery, the food, you know, the accomplishment.
You were just a few miles away from Abbottabad. Correct,
yeah.
Which is famous for, tell the audience what it's famous for.
Yeah, so that was my first trip in 2007, and upon coming back and then hearing the news, you know, a little bit after that Osama bin Laden had been taken out, got a call from my younger brother, Chris, who had also been on that trip as a base camp manager. Hey, remember where we had lunch? I said, yeah, I think so. That was Abbottabad. That's where Osama's camp, you know, compound was. I looked it up on the Google Maps, and we were less than half an hour away from there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So historical as well.
Yeah, and wild area.
You keep that piece there with you. I found this really interesting. I read that throughout all these years of photography, you've had this great and typical Achilles heel of being a self-loathing artist.
Yes.
And that you never, ever, ever wanted to put your personal work on public display.
100%.
Why?
You know, that's the only way I can describe it as an Achilles heel and self-loathing. It's just a hump that has held me back forever. And I think it's a good thing to talk about. I think a lot of artists go through the same thing. And, you know, like I was sharing with you earlier, I did random photo work for years and years and years, you know, easily 20 years. And I always thought I'd like to have work up in a gallery, but just felt this internal crush of like, no, can't do it, won't do it, not going to do it. Most of my work sits on hard drives. My computer's at home, in the closet, and, you know, bundles and bundles of sheets of negatives. And I've always had incredibly supportive family, you know, girlfriend, friends that have really been pushing me. Hey, you've got to do this. You've got great work.
Right.
And I said no for years and years and years.
And you do have great work. I'm not just going to mention the abandoned car that I love. There's a ton of great stuff that the folks over at Sawdust Winter Fantasy sent me to take a look at before this conversation. Great stuff that should be on display.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So as you go through this closet full of old negatives and stuff, do you ever go through it and go, well, yeah, this is a great shot. I'd like to put this on display. Or do you go back 15 or 20 years?
Oh, 100%. Okay. And I go down memory lane and it's great.
Right.
And I also see tons of photographs. I think, oh my gosh, this is garbage. I used to think this was good 10 years ago.
Right.
Trash again and more, you know, but then I do find shots, you know, this is great. And when you're showing somewhere like the Sawdust, you have to, you know, think, okay, what are people really going to like enough that they'll take home with them?
Right.
And figure out those images. So that's tough too. That's a bit of a weight on your shoulders.
Right. So is your thinking of how you're setting up your winter fantasy booth different than how you would set up a summertime Sawdust booth?
A little bit.
Okay.
I know it should be. You know, I speak to a lot of the artists and great community, by the way, of Sawdust Festival exhibitors. I mean, people have been doing this forever.
They all support each other?
They are so supportive. I mean, it really is a family. I learned that about doing the Sawdust. And now I miss it. I drive by the Sawdust. I'm like, I miss that time with all the people there. They really are so wonderful and supportive.
You should honk and wave as you drive by.
Yeah. And they are so helpful. But a lot of them tell me, you know, for the winter fantasy, you need a lot of smaller things. So, I mean, Christmas is coming up. And obviously, the bulk of shopping is going to be all about Christmas. And so they say you need a smaller thing, smaller items. You know, I'm a little bit somewhat stubborn on that because I still want to be just, you know, an artist. I want to put that's putting, you know, fine art, so to speak, on the walls. And I, you know, I'm like, what do I exhibit that's going to be small? So that's a bit of a tough question for me right now. I think I'm going to stick mostly with my standard, though.
Go with your gut.
I'm definitely going to put some Christmas lights up. You know, we got to get the little holiday spirit flowing.
Right on. And speaking with Cece, she gave you unbelievable support and said, hey, you're a member of the family now.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a special bond, right?
Yeah.
All artists
really
share a special bond anyway, but to be a member of that family.
Yeah.
By the way, Sawdust Festival's Winter Fantasy starts November 20th, and it happens every Saturday and Sunday up until December 19th. Dan Stensland, looking forward to seeing you at Winter Fantasy.
Looking forward to having you visit and all this supportive community here in the Laguna as well. Love to have you out and have conversations about photography, your life, what moves you, and hope everybody's having a great Monday out there so far.
All right. And at some point during the Winter Fantasy, I'd love to have you see the mannequin. I'd love to see the mannequin in the booth at some point. Man. Bring the mannequin. We'll take some pictures.
Maybe just for you guys.
Dan Stensland, photographer at the Sawdust Festival's Winter Fantasy. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me.